Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing? This fine. You told me it was spring last week. You promised me spring, and then there was snow.
I did. Last week,
That is the power you have over the weather.
I promised last week. I said, this will be the coldest morning ever. Yeah. And then we got snow. That was wild.
I know. There was a snow day. My kid didn't go to school.
Yeah.
I drove there. I was so positive there was going to be school. We drove there.
Oh, wow.
It was chained. My kid's like doing cartwheels in the back seat. And I'm like, great. Now what do I do with my kid now?
Yeah, it's not every day in Georgia that you get to build a snowman.
Snow days are very rare here.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But I promise it's going to be nice.
Promise.
It's going to be warm. It's going to be really warm for me next week because I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be
right.
in sunny Florida.
There you go. And it's going to snow.
Yeah, so you have Sean Nelson to look forward to next week as the co-host with Lee Cantor.
The LinkedIn guru.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a good show. It's going to be a great show today, too, Lee, because there's a couple of subjects that we get a lot of requests for information about from our listeners, and one of them is coaching, and one of them is franchising, and we have three guests this morning, two of them that are focusing on the training and coaching arena, and one that has a franchise that we'd like to hear more about. Let's start first with Dia Holman. Dia from ExecuTrain is a trainer, and gosh, she has over 20 years of training experience, and I can't believe that because she looks like she's only about 20 herself.
Yeah, she started very young.
Go figure. So welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Dia. Tell us about ExecuTrain.
Well, thank you. And with a welcome like that, I might come every day.
We would like that.
Well, ExecuTrain is an employee productivity company. Our key areas are training in desktop applications and business skills. We use a training methodology that's guaranteed to help employees work more efficiently and improve their overall productivity. So training, there are different training methods that can be used, whether it's instructor-led training, using e-learning, or perhaps even using virtual training.
Did ExecuTrain develop these methodology, or they're taking other people's methodology?
Well, our primary way, what we focus on, is using the adult learning theory. And the adult learning theory has been around for decades, but it is proven over and over for me, time and time again, if we use that method in the classroom, people are engaged, they're able to, and most importantly, they're able to retain what they've learned and use it back on the job.
What is adult learning?
The adult learning theory is based on ways that adults learn, and that might be key things like previewing, this is what we're going to accomplish today, breaking that down into identifiable steps. A key part of that is doing practice exercises along the way, making sure that as an adult, you have a chance to drive or play with it while we're in a training room, practice it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the day, reviewing it, wrapping up, and primarily throughout the day also talking about benefits. Why are we learning this? What are we going to use
right,
it for?
Right, so is it worth my time?
Exactly.
That's probably a pushback you get a lot of time.
If I'm an adult, I don't want to waste my time. I
That's
want
right.
what I need when I need it,
right.
and show me how I'm going to use it fast.
Exactly. Adults don't like to be in training.
No, they don't.
They definitely don't, especially when they're in sales and it's taking away, in their mind, taking away from their productivity. I'd love to know a little bit more about, the cost of training an employee has got to be pretty extensive, especially when you're talking about wanting to retain employees and quality employees and keeping them up to date on training. Do you have any knowledge of what the expenditures might be for companies as far as training goes?
Well, I would love to talk to that point because I think that's something that's key in everyone's mind today. Most companies spend an average of approximately $1,000 a year per learner on training. There have been studies done, and I think a lot of companies, if they're cutting their budgets and worrying about costs, that's one of the first things that can go out of their budget. There was a study done through 2003 that evaluated stocks from companies on the best companies to work for list. And best companies to work for typically value their employees as assets and are spending money on training. Those stocks grew in value almost three times the rate of those in the S&P 500 portfolio. There have been other studies done. Laura Basie is a CEO of a survey research firm and a professor at Georgetown, and she writes that organizations that make large investments in people typically have lower employee turnover. That's associated with higher customer satisfaction, which is a driver of profitability. So there are lots of studies done where if you're training your people, maybe not even on their computer skills, but also in their management skills. If you get promoted to be a manager, you don't just become a manager overnight. There's a lot of training and investment that needs to go into that so that that manager can produce the results they need to produce.
What different types of training are you seeing today? Are some of the training methods done through webinars, or is all of it done in person?
We do a lot today, and I think it's part of the way the world is turning. We do a lot of blended learning. People don't want to spend all day in a classroom, so we try to mix that up as much as we can. We're doing some team building exercises for a company, and every week we go out and we do some games and role plays. We might have someone say, okay, here's some e-learning classes. Take these e-learning classes, and then we're going to get back together for 2 hours with an instructor to talk about the more complicated things or to give you some extra additional things that you need to know.
How do you deal with a lot of times when it's an e-learning situation where the person just puts it on their computer while they're doing other things and they're just, you know, looking up occasionally and pressing next?
That's one of the things that when someone calls me and they say, I'm not sure, should I do e-learning or should I do instructor-led? I talk to them a lot. There are pros and cons of each. If we sell a company e-learning, I tell them, you have to manage this process. I know, for example, the way I work all day, I'm like, oh, I didn't have time to do that class today. I'll do it again tomorrow during my lunch hour. And tomorrow comes and
right.
I don't do it again.
But they know they're going to get dinged on their performance review, so they know they have to
again,
sit through it.
It has to be managed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the best way to do that is do an e-learning class, follow up with some type of engagement
right.
with someone so that you can see, did I learn anything?
So, or like, did I just so a hybrid of using all of your
exactly.
tools.
Exactly, and that's what I call blended learning.
I'd like to go ahead and introduce Don Cook to the show this morning. Don Cook is an executive coach with Daybreak Enterprises, and I love your tagline, developing people and driving profits. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Don, you have a lot of coaching experience. Tell us about that.
Well, I actually have been doing coaching as part of my career for the last roughly 20 years of training and development and coaching. My company actually formed in 2002 and became a certified coach then, and since then have been doing a little different type of coaching, focusing more on the executive level as opposed to all levels of management and employees.
So I'd love to know, what's the difference between training and coaching? Because the things Dee is talking about, I see a lot of overlap. Can you define the two maybe?
Oh, there's absolutely a lot of overlap. Training traditionally is considered as sort of an event where you introduce the concepts and you give them an opportunity to apply it and really walk away with an awareness, an increased awareness of here's what I need to be able to do and here's how I can do it. And that works really well for something where you've got a very specific application, something like, say, Excel. If you're learning how to use Excel, you have an application right when you go back to your desk, you can use that to create a budget, right? Mm-hmm. Soft skills, specifically, are harder to apply because you don't, for example, I specialize in emotional intelligence. You come out of emotional intelligence training, you go back to your desk and you don't go, okay, I'm going to be emotionally intelligent right now. It's like you don't have an immediate application. You have to have an opportunity.
Can you define emotional intelligence? So
I have no idea what it is. No, I'm kidding.
Dia, train her.
I need some training. Emotional intelligence is essentially the ability to recognize and manage your own emotions so you can remain productive, as well as recognizing when others' emotions are getting them in the way of a productive interaction
mm-hmm.
and being able to adjust your behavior accordingly to kind of get them back to their whole brain thinking. And so coaching is being able to take what you learned in training and apply it, or at least one form of coaching, apply it on a regular basis. In other words, having a specific follow-up to where here's my goal that I want to achieve and how I'm going to apply the knowledge that I gained in training, and I'm going to work on it every single week, let's say, where I have a specific plan, an outcome that I'm trying to achieve. And how's my coach going to help me stay focused on that plan so that I can see my progress every week and have a forced application?
What types of clients do you work with?
I work with really any industry. Right now, most of my clients are in the utilities industry, and I've worked with some medical organizations, but I've worked with larger organizations like Turner and the Federal Reserve Bank and so forth. But really, I focus on the leadership of each of those organizations, because if you get the leadership support, the rest is so much easier.
That's good to know.
I'm going to throw another phrase into the mix here. You have training, you have coaching. How does mentoring fit in?
Well, that's funny that you ask it, because usually people get confused between mentoring, coaching, and counseling.
Oh, right? There you go.
And so let me explain the difference between the three of them. Counseling, of course, if you wanted to use an analogy of looking in a rear view mirror, a lot of times with counseling you have to look at what got me where I am today before you can figure out how to go forward. In coaching, we look out the front window and say, where do I want to go and how do I want to get there? The assumption is not that there's anything that needs to be fixed. It's just, how am I going to improve my development? And mentoring is more along the lines of, if I have experience in something, I can help and mentor you on how to do that. Whereas a coach doesn't necessarily have to have that specific experience. They just need to know how to ask the right questions to get you to unlock that information.
That's interesting. Now, on the training end, Dia, you have to learn all these applications. So if you're training a group of folks on something, do you go through a training course yourself before that?
We learn the applications in many different ways. But we are able to go into organizations. If a company has a proprietary software, they might call us and say, we need to roll this out around the country. Can you get trainers up to speed on it? Yes, we can. And because we've done it so many times, it's easy for us to take an application and say, I know how long it's going to take me to learn that. I know how to learn it, and I know what the key components are going to be of it. So it's pretty easy to break down once you've done it a few times.
It's easy to break down so you can learn it, so then turn around and train it to others.
Exactly.
And what kind of training do you get at executive train or ExecuTrain? I mean, are you trained specifically in different types of methods?
Well, again, we do spend time focusing on adult learning theory. Right. We make sure that all of the instructors that train for us understand the adult learning theory and understand exactly how to apply that in a classroom.
Right, but are there any, like, what are your go-to training classes you do?
We do training on all desktop applications, so any type of the Microsoft applications. That's the hot thing right now. People are upgrading to 07. And again, we do a heavy emphasis on business skills, whether that's management training and you need time management, or you need coaching skills, or you need to understand how you're a manager. How do you do an effective performance review? We do business skills and desktop applications.
I'm curious to know, what are some of the differences you see in training folks of different generations? Because folks in their 20s and then those in their 50s and 60s, there's just such a wide
variety.
Right,
you'd think they'd learn differently. And now I've been told that this is a unique time where there's like four different generations all in the workplace at the same time. So how do you handle that?
It's very different. I typically find that the older generation does not want to partake in e-learning. They would much rather be in a more comfortable environment of an instructor-led environment. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not true in every case. That's a generalization. The younger audiences definitely get e-learning, like e-learning, and if they come to training, want it to be a short, maybe a 45-minute, hour-long training. They also really like virtual training. Can't I just sit at my desk and tune in and we'll get it that way? Mm-hmm. Maybe the older generation would prefer, I'm going to tune in and you're going to be there. You know, it's a little different concept. It's what you're familiar with.
And how about you, Dawn, in coaching? Have you seen things that have changed with the multi-generational environment?
Well, you know, coaching is such a new profession. It really hasn't been a profession but for like the last 10 years. And so the changing in the coaching arena is more along the lines of, does it have to be in person or can it be over the phone? There's even coaching by email and coaching by text now.
Wow.
So what do you prefer?
It really depends on the client. Sometimes I prefer being in person because you can get such a better feel for what they're really experiencing from their body language,
right,
and not just their tone.
I'm sure everybody knows that in person you see all these visual cues that they could be telling you one thing, but they could be rolling their eyes or, you know, you're missing all that.
Absolutely. And we know that roughly 55% of what we interpret from communication comes from body language, and the other 37%, I think, is tone, and 7% is words.
So the people who do texting must be really good, really intuitive.
Well, now, texting is really more sort of the follow-up or the on-the-spot
right.
coaching.
Yeah, the right. compliance, right, to keep them compliant.
That's good. So, Dia, if you were to walk us through an ideal client, I mean, walk us through a scenario, a company you've worked with, or maybe just a scenario of recent for you.
I can give you a specific. First, I'll start with, for me, the ideal client is a client that looks at their people as assets, not cost. If you're looking at people as cost, you're not going to be investing. We have a client that pretty much engages us on an ongoing basis. We do management training, and it's ongoing because they understand, as people, and I know I feel that way myself, I'm never getting it all right. There's always something. And if I was good at time management last year, I might need to brush up and get some new skills again this year. So we work with them ongoingly in many different areas, in their desktop application training as well as their business skills training. And it works wonderfully. We're always working on some hot issues, but we're there consistently. And because we've been there so much, we understand their company and are able to customize and suggest training and make it even more beneficial for them.
Okay, great. And how about you, Dawn? Maybe walk us through a scenario of how you've worked with a client recently.
Well, I have one client I've sort of launched a grounds-up campaign, if you will, on emotional intelligence and having that be sort of a part of the fabric of their culture. And I started working with the managers and the associates in training and coaching them. And then last year was fortunate enough to work with the executive team and his staff. And he brought me in because he said, you know, we have a real challenge around there being a lot of silos in the organization, and the executives don't necessarily work together as a team. They're not very cohesive, and they don't trust each other. They need a little more, they need to understand each other's priorities, business priorities, so how they can leverage each other's information and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought me in to do really a year-long program where I did a series of trainings and coaching. So they would be trained. I actually started with emotional intelligence. So that was the foundation of getting them to understand how to work together. And then they would be coached. So after each session, each of the individuals would be coached on how to achieve their goal in terms of improving their relationships with the other members. And by the end of our year-long training, they were so much more productive, and we had taken assessments of their culture before and after, and there was about a 40% improvement.
Wow.
In their own view of how they see themselves. And I got an email from the CEO day before yesterday, and he said, you know, we just had our executive strategy meeting, and it went extremely well, and everyone was giving you all the kudos.
Wow, good for you.
So that was exciting, very exciting to hear that.
That's wonderful. Now, both of you, I'd love to know, where do you see your businesses in maybe 5 years? Do you see them changing, evolving? Where do you see your business in 5 years? How about you, Dawn?
Oh, in 5 years, I would be known as the emotional intelligence guru of the Southeast.
That's good.
That's my game plan. My mission in life really is to raise awareness of emotional intelligence in corporate America and its impact on the bottom line. You know, everybody says, oh, it's a touchy-feely thing. Well, it's touching and feeling bottom lines all around the world. So that's really where I'd like to see my business go, is to where I'm recognized as bringing to corporate America, or at least in the Southeast, the importance of being able to coach and train around emotional intelligence.
Excellent. How about you, Dia?
In many ways, I think it'll be building on more of the same. Virtual training is relatively new. I don't think instructor-led will ever completely go away, but we'll see more and more of the virtual and how it grows and changes the business. My goal is that in 5 years, companies are, again, seeing more and more that training is a process. It's not an event. It's a process, and it has to be continued and repeated. If a company has an end-of-the-year goal, maybe it's to sell more or produce more. Well, how are you going to get there? Probably through your people. And if we're not training those people ongoingly, we're probably not going to hit our goal. And we can cut cost in many different ways, but I believe that that investment in people brings great rewards many-fold to a company. So my goal is that companies start seeing that as well, and training becomes a process.
Excellent. You know, I know the two of you, somebody mentioned something about flossing their teeth in an analogy. and that was one of the reasons why the two of you are here together. So I need to know that analogy.
Well, when we were talking about what we wanted the topic to be, we decided that, you know, we were talking about improving performance in the workplace. And we thought, you know, people don't really want to invest right now. Everybody's afraid to invest. And one thing you can invest in is your people. And we were thinking, well, what would make sense as far as sort of like a catchy title or whatever? We thought, well, you only need to invest in the ones you want to keep. And we're like, okay. And what came to mind was when I was about 10 years old, I went to the dentist, and he said, you know, you have really crowded teeth. You want to make sure that the ones in the front of you, you know, take care of your teeth, and you need to make sure you floss your teeth. And I thought, okay, I'm 10 years old, and so I asked this very innocent question, well, which ones do I need to floss? And he smiled, and he said, only the ones you want to keep. And so when we were talking about it, it's like, you know, that's exactly how you want to look at your people. You know, the only invest in the ones you want to keep.
Right. Yeah. What's that old saying that's about training, that what is it? It's about, if you train the person, then like, what if they leave? And then the person says, well, what if you don't train them and they stay?
Exactly. Exactly.
I kind of like the tooth analogy better.
Yeah, that's better. Smoother.
So, ladies, if people want to reach out and learn more about you and your companies, how can they do that? Why don't you give your information, Dawn, and we'll also put it on our website.
My organization is Daybreak Enterprises, and my website is daybreakeq.com. And the reason it's Daybreak EQ is because EQ is short for Emotional Intelligence Quotient. So that's sort of an easy way to remember it, Daybreak EQ. So you can contact me at dawn@daybreakeq.com.
Excellent. Thanks for being with us today, Dawn.
Thank you. My pleasure.
How about you, Dia?
And our website is executrain.com. There is an email, atlanta@executrain.com. And my name is Dia Holman.
Thank you, ladies, so much for being with us today. We're going from one great subject to another, although the next one, Lee, is one that quite honestly puts me to sleep.
Oh, nice.
Talking about taxes. Good thing I've had some coffee today, but I am quite convinced that our next guest is going to make this exciting for me. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Stan Friedman, who's President and Chief Operating Officer at RetroTax. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, what's RetroTax? We got to know.
It's caffeine. All right, I'm going to keep you awake for the next 30 or 40 minutes.
Oh, no, really? So tell us about RetroTax.
RetroTax is, firstly and foremost, RetroTax is not a tax preparation concept. So we don't do tax returns. We don't do the things we traditionally associate with tax. Ours is really a niche business, which has learned that there is a tremendous opportunity to help businesses that employ people identify and then administer federal and state wage-based tax credits that the government makes available to them, but they either don't know about it, or even when they learn that these credits and incentives exist, they really don't have the wherewithal and the management cycles or the people to administer to them. So we've kind of filled that niche by taking care of that for them.
Are there certain industries that this works better for than others?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone who employs people.
That's it?
Hey, now, are there ever any tax credits for training?
There are tax credits for everything. Literally, the two focuses that our company puts its attention against are federal wage-based credits that fall into either geographic categories or demographic categories. There are some 200 regions around the country that the federal government has designated as an empowerment zone, a federal renewal community, a lesser developed census tract, a rural renewal county. Any of these geographic designations spell tax credits for companies that are based within the confines of those zones and also employ people who are residents of those zones. Example, if you had a business inside of one of these federal empowerment zones and your employees, some percentage of them, were also residents, the credit could be worth as much to the business owner as $3,000 per year per person. And we call ourselves RetroTax because we start with a look backward. We can go back 3 years from the most open tax period. So, for example, right now, you said it's timely that we talk about taxes now. March 15th is the first corporate quarterly filing date. And so any business that has yet to file its 08 taxes can have us take a look back at 08 and as well go back to 07, 06, and 05. Once they close their 08 return, 05 also comes off the radar. We can only go back as far as 06. And go forward again. So the bottom line is $3,000 per year for a business that's located inside of a federal empowerment zone, a three-year look back. If a company had as few as $3,000 opportunities for three or four people, $9,000 or $12,000 for 08 and another $9,000 or $12,000 for 07, 06, 05, you're talking some pretty serious money in any economy, much less compelling money in an economy like this. Now just let me ask you, do taxes still bore you?
No, and you know what? I like hearing when you're getting money back. I mean, and it makes sense to me when I'm looking at the literature that you provided me as well from RetroTax going
back.
That's
where the name, that was the genesis of the name. We took a lot of time in putting all this together and trying to name it correctly. And I mean, anyone who started a business knows how difficult it is to come up with a name that clears the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for trademarking that you can also get a .com.
Right.
So it took a little time, but we came up with a winner.
So now, are you a franchise owner of this, or you created this franchise?
No, I'm the franchisor, and what we've done is, I guess I'm a kindred spirit in ways to a guy named Ray Kroc, who I've admired for years and never thought I could put my name in the same sentence as his. But I really understand, I think, what Ray Kroc must have felt like when he discovered the McDonald Brothers. My partner in this business has been in this business for 16 years. we were brought together back in the mid or early 90s, actually, by someone else who had a vision for what this could look like in the franchise arena. That really never launched. We got started, but it never went off the ground. My partner, Al Newcomb, and I have stayed connected and friends through these years. And for the past dozen or more years, I've been every year that we get together in friendship over a meal, I've been back at him saying, we need to franchise this. This right. is still something that we ought to do. The time didn't present itself as right until about a year and a half ago. And in the end of July 07, we formed our limited liability company. We began the process of building our operations manuals, our training manuals, and our operating agreements between each other. And we formed the brand RetroTax and used his corporate model of 16 years as the company store, if you will,
right.
and modeled what we're doing now after that.
So do you have franchises out there now?
Yeah, we do. Proud to have our first franchisees right here in the Atlanta market.
Mm-hmm.
Good longtime friends of mine that are also franchising professionals for many years. Our second franchisees located in Cincinnati, Ohio, and our third in South Florida, Dade Broward. And number four, agreements just came in yesterday for Chicago.
Now, is it by geography? Is that how you do it?
What I'm doing, Lee, is trying to keep this as aligned with the geographic opportunities as possible. As I said at the beginning of the segment, there's another kind of credit that we administer as well, which is a demographic category.
Right.
There are no geographic constraints on the demographic profile, but what we want to do is we want to put our franchisees in marketplaces that offer the most fertile opportunity. So we're kind of paralleling where the geographic opportunities exist because there you can do both. And so we're following those zones around the country.
Is this something where there'll be just one in Atlanta or it can handle more than one?
It can work out one of two ways. I can either have cities that have independent multiple ownership of unit opportunities that would work in the same city, or somebody could come to me that had the financial wherewithal and want to take the entire market.
Like to be like a master franchise?
Don't like that word too much because it has connotations that it gets misused, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But somebody who could be an area developer or have an area development right whereby he would be the only person in the marketplace that would have the rights to utilize our brand.
Right.
It sounds like you have a lot of franchising experience. Do you sit on any boards?
Yes, just a few. I've been in franchising for 20 years, and it's been something that I have got just an extreme passion for. I've been involved in for a great many years with the International Franchise Association, have done a lot of committee work there, have served for the past 2 years as the chairman of the IFA's Minorities in Franchising Committee. I'm one of the founding members and the first vice chair of their Diversity Institute. And right here at home in Atlanta, I chair and I'm a co-founder of the Atlanta Franchise Alliance.
Is your franchise something you have to be an accountant to be a franchise owner, or this is open to anybody?
Preferably not. You know,
preferably not.
let me back that up a little bit by something that we heard in the first portion of the program about training and about coaching and about what types of skills are best suited for what our business is all about. It won't hurt to have an accounting background, but the most important thing and the greatest and most single important element for us are interpersonal skills, somebody who can intangible sales, somebody who has the ability to speak to high net worth individuals, to business owners, to somebody who sits in the C-suite and get the message to them in the first mm-hmm. couple of seconds, or they don't really care to hear about the rest.
Right.
So that is number one. We can teach.
The rest.
We can teach the rest, yeah, but you can't teach interpersonal skills.
Sure.
That's great. So somebody with an emotional intelligence, too. Got to have the good EQ and good training.
How's this economy? You think this is a good economy, a good time to start a franchise?
You know, I just hate to knock wood and say, we're not even recession-proof. I think we're more recession-friendly.
Uh-huh. Right.
In any economy, I know of nobody except for Joe Biden who thinks that paying taxes is a patriotic thing that you should do more of, right? I don't know too many people who are in favor of paying more than their fair share. And I think certainly in any economy, people will try to save as much as they can from their tax liability. But in an economy like we're in today, I think what we provide and what we offer is a compelling opportunity for businesses right. to take advantage of these services.
So often, too, Stan, you don't know what you don't know.
That's
you don't
exactly
know what
right.
credits are available. You
know,
you don't know what to ask.
It's amazing that you bring that point forward because I think it took some time for me to convince Al, my partner, that we didn't really want to name our company. This is too good to be true. But that's what he heard for years and years and years from business owners who absolutely had no knowledge that these credits exist. And when you bring it forward and you share with them the information and you give them the validity of the information by telling them, go to the IRS publication 954, Google that. All of the regulations that cover this area of tax credits and incentives is available for you to read and see that this is real. Then, once they learn about it, they find out that trying to do this on their own is almost akin to trying to get a mortgage loan closed without the help of a closing attorney.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've already gone through the learning curve. You do this every day. It's the first time for any new, a business owner. They're not an expert in this. You know the little nuances. There's no learning curve anymore.
There are a lot of nuances, too. The geography of this is what drives this. We've got a sophisticated mapping software program that helps us identify the addresses that are in a zone and the addresses that are not. If a business tried to do this on its own and made a mistake about taking credits.
Right, that they didn't deserve. So then that probably opens up another 50 cans of worms they don't even want to.
Could be a very expensive lesson that they've been better served not learning.
Right.
By having somebody like us do this. And we do it on a contingent fee basis.
So there's no real out-of-pocket? It's only based on what you save them?
100% performance-based. If we don't find credits, you've done nothing but take a little time to explore the option or the possibility, and it costs you nothing more than that. No hard dollars involved until we do find credits, and then we...
What's the split?
We traditionally get about 20% is what we would take off the dollar value of the credits that we find, identify, and administer.
That sounds fair. Sounds like a win-win to me. And give us your information so folks can reach out and find out more about your company.
Absolutely. Our website is www.retrotax.com. Our toll-free number, 800-925-0557. And I'm happy to provide my email for direct contact, which is stan.friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N, @retrotax.com.
Stan, taxes are no longer boring to me.
Look at you.
I lit up.
I see that.
I woke up. I lit up. That's exciting. And for folks that are business owners that don't know the credits available to them, very important to reach out to RetroTax and reach out to Stan.
And I, too, would like to just make certain that those who have an interest not only in our core services but in learning more about our franchise opportunities are certainly more than welcome to reach out to me as well. We'd be more than happy to create a dialogue in markets where this would be appropriate.
Stan, you're not the average boring finance guy. What do you do for fun? I got to know.
I'm having fun right now.
Well, that's good. That's good. We hope folks will reach out and contact our fabulous guest this morning. And until next week, actually, I'm not going to be here next week.
2 weeks.
I'll be on the beach next week. But in 2 weeks, we'll see you then. I'm Amy Otto for the Atlanta Business Radio Show.